Hello, patrons. Only a brief intro this time because, like you, I'm keen to skip the entree and get to the main course. All you need to know is that this episode continues the story thread from episode 2, where David left the horrific aftermath of Lisa's death in his flat in Brighton in the company of Elizabeth Daventry. They were bound for the London offices of Daventry & West, Underwood's lawyers in London. And now, as the curtain rises on this episode, they've arrived. Why, that's them there, entering stage right into... Underwood and Flinch, Underground. A novel written and read by Mike Bennett. This podcast is intended for an adult audience. Episode 4. The offices of Daventry and West were far from what David had been expecting. He and Elizabeth had been walking along Lime Street in the city of London. David had noticed they were heading towards the iconic tower at 30 St. Mary Axe, more popularly known as the Gherkin, and he had half expected that to be their final destination. It fitted with his mental image of where a rich and long-established firm of London solicitors would locate their illustrious firm. But then, quite unexpectedly, Elizabeth had stopped outside a tobacconist's shop and announced, "Here we are." He looked around, confused. "What, are you getting some fags?" "No, I mean, we're here." David was about to ask where "here" was when she approached a door beside the shop. It was a wooden door, painted with gloss black paint, that David's first instincts told him must surely lead to a flat above the shop. He looked up. There were four floors rising over the shop premises, but their windows gave nothing away. As for the door, its only features were a letterbox and a keyhole, into which Elizabeth now slipped a key. She opened the door and stepped aside for him to enter. David stared into a gloomy hallway. He couldn't keep the incredulity from his voice when he said, "This is it?" Elizabeth pushed a timed light switch, and a single shaded bulb hanging in the hallway came on, illuminating the emptiness. "Yes, welcome to Daventry and West." David was looking up at the floors above the tobacconist, as if perhaps he was missing something. "Is something wrong?"
"There's no sign," he said.
"No, it's not..."
"Not what?"
"I dunno," said David as he entered the hall. "I suppose I thought an old London law firm like this, funded by Underwood's money, would have something a bit more upmarket."
"Ah."
She followed him inside and closed the door behind her.
"In tenebris lux."
"What?"
"It's Latin. It means in darkness, light. It's the company motto. We hide our brilliance in the shadows."
"I don't follow."
"Other law firms want to be seen, David. Daventry and West don't."
She walked past him and led the way down the hall to another door that lacked even a keyhole. There was a small security camera above the door, and she looked up at it. A moment later, the door was released, and she opened it onto a small room where a fluorescent light was automatically flickering on. There was nothing in the room but an elevator. She pressed the call button, and the doors opened.
"A lift?" said David.
"Of course." They stepped into the elevator.
"That's all there is here?"
"Yes."
"It's odd, isn't it? I mean, no reception, no people. What is it, all upstairs?"
"No." She pressed a button on the control panel, and the lift began to descend.
"We're going down?"
"Yes."
"Ah."
David nodded as understanding began to dawn.
"I get it. Underground. In tenebris. In darkness. No annoying sunlight issues."
"Yes, precisely.
Where we're going is all that remains of our original premises. The old building was bombed in World War II. You would have liked it. It was more upmarket.
She smiled to show that she was joking.
This subterranean extension was added by his lordship towards the beginning of the last century when they began to develop the Underground Rail network. Prior to that, his meetings with the partners had always taken place after the hours of darkness, but the new underground tunnels provided him with night and day access.
You mean this building connects to a tube station?
No, but there are private passages down there that his lordship had them build on for him.
How could he do that?
He was an investor in the companies that pioneered the underground.
It was no matter for them to modify their designs to accommodate certain small conditions of his investment checks.
Have you ever noticed when you're on an underground train how every now and again you go past an unmarked door?
No, it all just looks dark to me.
As it should, in Tenebris.
So wait a second, you're saying that all those doors...
Elizabeth laughed. Oh, God, no, not all of them. Most of them are probably just London transports. But some of them, yes.
They're Underwoods?
Yes.
Where do they go?
Elizabeth smiled as the elevator settled to a halt. No one knows.
The doors opened onto an oak-panelled room with a rich green carpet. It was lit by shaded wall lights with brass fittings that looked as though they might once have been gas lights. A middle-aged man with a perfectly bald head sat behind a computer monitor. He rose as Elizabeth stepped out of the elevator.
Miss Daventry.
Lance, Elizabeth replied. She held out a hand to David as he followed her into view. This is Mr. David Flinch, John's brother. And David... This is Lance, the receptionist you were looking for.
Blimey,
said Lance. He picked up a napkin and wiped his hands and lips. David noticed an open packet of sandwiches and a takeaway coffee on his desk. Lance came around his desk and held out his hand in greeting.
Honoured to meet you, sir. I was very sorry to hear about John and your sister. And his lordship, of course. Tragedy. But they say you put up a heck of a fight, sir.
Thank you. Said David, shaking his hand. I did my best.
If you don't mind my asking, sir, what was he like, his lordship?
Not now, Lance, said Elizabeth. This isn't a social visit.
Sorry, miss. They're expecting you. Just go on down. I'll let them know you've arrived.
Lance pushed a button on his desk, and a set of double doors opened automatically onto a corridor where the oak panels and green carpeting continued.
Nice to meet you, Mr. Flinch.
And you, Lance, said David. He was about to go when he noticed two aged oil portraits on the wall opposite Lance's desk. He went over for a closer inspection. They were of two stern-looking men, each in full courtroom regalia of white wig and black robes.
Who are these guys? He asked.
The original partners, said Elizabeth. The one on the left is my ancestor.
David looked at the picture. The subject had a gaunt-looking face, with a long hooked nose and drooping brows.
No offence, but I don't see any family resemblance.
Elizabeth smiled.
Thank you. Shall we go?
She held her hand out to the corridor. As they walked, their feet silent on the heavy carpet, they passed between doors that faced each other across the corridor. There were names on them. David Nicol, Matt Smith, Molly Herbert, John McLeish, Nick Robinson, Jackie Phillips. David recognised some of them from the list of sect members' names on John's computer.
And who are these people? He asked. Lawyers, mostly.
David shook his head, dismayed.
How does one guy, and one who's been asleep for the last 50 years, need this many lawyers?
Oh, we have other clients, David. Lord Underwood was our principal client, but there are others.
Others? Like who?
Well, that's obviously confidential.
Elizabeth stopped outside the door at the end of the corridor and knocked. From the other side came a curt,
Come!
Elizabeth opened the door and held it for David.
After you.
David went in. A long table ran through the centre of the room towards a fireplace. Three men sat at the far end. Behind them, on the wall above the fireplace, was an oil portrait of Underwood in Georgian finery. He looked down on the meeting table with a look of cold command.
"Ah, Mr. Flinch," said the grey-haired man at the head of the table.
He spoke through teeth clenched around a pipe, which he removed as he stood up. He wore a bow tie and a navy blue three-piece suit, tailored to lessen the lines of his broad midriff. He looked about 60 years old.
"Thank you for coming in to see us. We're most dreadfully sorry for your loss."
He indicated his colleagues, who also stood.
"We spoke on the phone. I'm Carlton West. This is my son, Tobias, and my partner, James Daventry."
The two men bowed their heads in turn. Then Daventry came over to David with his hand extended. He was younger than West, about 50, tall and slim, with thick dark hair parted at the side, and a pencil moustache that rose with his smile. His suit was also navy, though in pinstripe. David took his hand. His skin was soft, his grip disinterested.
"Mr. Flinch, pleasure to finally meet you. Such a terrible business you've been through. Please, take a seat. Can I offer you anything? Brandy, whiskey? I understand you're imbibing again."
David glanced at the table and saw the other men all had glasses of amber liquid before them, so he nodded.
"Thank you. I'll have a whiskey, please."
Elizabeth indicated a seat on West's right-hand side and directly opposite Daventry's chair. David sat down, and she took a seat beside him. Daventry opened some panels in the wall, and lights came on to reveal a small drinks cabinet. He selected a decanter.
"How do you take it?"
"As it comes, please."
"Good man. Liz?"
"Not for me," said Elizabeth.
"Sensible as always,"
said Daventry. He handed the drink to David.
"Here, that should help steady the nerves after what you've been through."
David took the drink and Daventry returned to his seat. David took a sip. It was delicious, single malt, probably insanely expensive. He wanted to take another, but restrained himself. Now West extended his hand and David shook it.
"We had hoped to meet you under better circumstances," said West. "We didn't get the chance at his lordship's resurrection. Thought we might have better luck over the following nights, but, well, unfortunately..."
"What with one thing and another," said Daventry.
"Well, it wasn't on the cards,"
West finished. He sipped at his pipe, a classic Dunhill billiard with a chestnut bowl.
"At the time, your sister informed us that his lordship was somewhat unpredictable, and that you were, well... much the same. She advised that we return to London to give you both time to acclimatise to your new circumstances."
Daventry snorted.
"Ha! What she actually said was to come back after she'd got rid of you."
"Oh, God!" laughed Tobias West. "Steady on, Uncle. That sounds like she meant to kill him."
To David he said, "What she meant was, she was going to convince you to pack up and leave the job of guardian to her." "Oh, and you thought that was a good idea?"
"We were concerned,"
said Daventry.
"Your performance at his lordship's resurrection wasn't exactly what we'd been expecting. It left us all rather,
"Concerned was the right word, James," said West. "But that's no matter now. Since then, Mr. Flinch has more than redeemed himself. We've had glowing reports from Senor Hernandez about your devotion to duty, Mr. Flinch, and your actions at the Russian nightclub were nothing short of heroic."
"Thank you," said David. "I'm sure none of you would have done anything less to protect his lordship."
"Oh, quite so, quite so,"
said Tobias, nodding matter-of-factly.
"And we all deeply regret that you had to take sole responsibility with the Spanish police," said West. "We did everything we could to get you out as quickly as possible, though I'm sure that's a little consolation."
"Well, that's okay," said David.
"I'm grateful to you for all you've done, and to Hernandez, too. He's a good man. You should give him a pay rise."
He took another sip of his drink.
Yes, yes he is, said West. As you know, the poor fellow's very upset about your being here. But then, of course, he had no idea what you were up against, did he?
I wonder, said Daventry. Did you?
What? Said David.
Know what you were going up against?
No. Christ, I only knew someone had taken Lisa prisoner and was threatening to hurt her if I didn't come back immediately. If I'd known it was a vampire I was going up against, I don't know what I'd have done, but I certainly wouldn't have gone in there armed only with a kitchen knife.
Of course, said West. It's not something one could even imagine. I, for one, have never even heard the like.
And yet, here we are, said Daventry. Unimaginable or not, it has happened, and it's up to us to find out who the devil is responsible.
Yes, said West. And to that end, Mr. Flinch, I hate to ask you to have to relive this morning's terrible events, but would you be able to tell us what happened? In detail, if you don't mind.
No, of course. David reached for his cigarettes, pausing as he took them from his packet and glancing at the partners for permission.
Oh, please, said West,
clamping the stem of his pipe back between his teeth.
Smoke away! You won't find any of that smoking ban nonsense in here.
Thank you. David flashed the packet round to Daventry, Tobias, and Elizabeth, all of whom declined. Then he lit up. Lisa called me last night, just after 2 in the morning, Spanish time. He took another sip of his drink and looked down into his glass, gently swirling the liquid and letting the memories come. I was asleep when she phoned. He told them everything that had happened, concluding with Elizabeth's arrival at the flat with Busby and Hollis. He drained the last of his drink and accepted the offer of a refill from Daventry, who said,
So, you must have your suspicions. Who do you think could be responsible?
You mean besides the late Lord Underwood? Said David.
Come on, Flinch, said West. We've already been through that on the telephone.
I know. I've talked to Elizabeth about it as well. And yes, I agree. It doesn't make any sense. But if you're going to ask me for a suspect, a vampire suspect, well then who else do I know? Who else is there? Except Henry Verlaine.
He gave a little laugh. At the mention of Verlaine, everyone in the room seemed to stop just for a beat, as though time had got stuck for a second, and only David was still able to move. Then the moment was past.
Verlaine?
Said Daventry from where he was pouring David's drink.
Who's that?
Henry Verlaine, said David. Well, he was a pirate back in the 18th century when Underwood was still human. Underwood told me about him one night in Almacena. He was supposed to have gone down with his ship in the Caribbean, but there's a photo in the house in Almacena that was taken in 1900 with Underwood, Alistair Crowley, W.B. Yeats, and a guy called Henry Verlaine.
West relit his pipe.
And you, what? You think it's the same man?
I don't know. At the time I saw it, I thought it was a bit odd. And, you know, how can this bloke be alive for 200 years? It's a logical conclusion, really, isn't it?
Vampirism?
Daventry resumed his seat and took a sip of his drink.
Why? Because the pirate in Underwood's story and the man in the photograph both have the same name? Really, Mr. Flinch, if they'd both been called John Smith, would you have even noticed him?
Well, no, probably not, but I don't know. It just struck me as a coincidence, that's all.
So, you believe they're one and the same, and a vampire to boot?
Daventry gave a little chuckle.
Well, if he is, he's none that I know of.
Oh, so you do know others, said David. Elizabeth mentioned on the way in that you had other clients who also like to do business in Tenebris.
Daventry looked aside to West, and David did the same. The older man was sitting back in his chair and taking little sips of smoke from his pipe. West considered David for a few moments, then said,
Yes, we have other clients, Mr. Flinch. Other clients in Tenebris.
Carlton?
Daventry started, but West held up a hand.
It's all right, James. We're all friends here, aren't we, Mr. Flinch?
David shifted in his seat. I like to think so, yeah.
Good. So do we.
So who are they, then? Asked David. You're asking me who I suspect when I know zero vampires, and all the time you've got a whole Rolodex full of possibilities. West gave a low laugh.
Hardly, Mr. Flinch. We have a few clients, but none of whom would ever do anything to harm you.
How do you know?
Because they are family, said Daventry.
What?
They are vampires made by Lord Underwood in his lifetime. His progeny.
His family, said West.
David sat forward, looking from one partner to the other.
Hang on. You're saying there's a whole fucking family of these things?
West nodded.
I object to the word things, but yes.
And they're in London?
Oh, no. London is, how shall we say, off limits.
Why?
It's not safe for them. So few places are these days. Why do you think you never hear anything about vampires in the newspapers?
Because, I don't know, I thought Underwood was the only one, didn't I? And of course he was asleep in Spain.
Well, that's good. That's what we wanted you to think. And that vampires don't exist is certainly what we want the rest of society to think, so no one ever bothers our clients.
David was stunned. He picked up his whiskey and drank it down in one. He set the glass down and took a deep breath.
Why?
Why what? Asked West.
You said it wasn't safe for them. Why? Surely it'd be the other way round, wouldn't it? I mean, it shouldn't be vampires that are afraid of people, but people that are afraid of vampires.
Well, yes, you would think that, wouldn't you? But no. Over the last 100 years, vampires have been threatened by increasingly sophisticated forces seeking to destroy them. When Lord Underwood was alive, these forces were manageable, but since he's been gone, they've grown less so.
What my partner means is that they've all but won the day, Flinch,
said Daventry.
London, Paris, New York, Berlin, anywhere his lordship and the family used to thrive, are now purged.
Well, then, so where are they, this family?
Ah, well, now that is confidential. All I can say is that from time to time they need us to undertake certain business transactions on their behalf, and we do so, efficiently, discreetly.
In tenebris, said David.
Exactly,
said Daventry.
But how do you know that none of these vampires, this family, could have attacked Lisa? Asked David. Surely some of them have got a bone to pick with Underwood. Some of them may even have a bone to pick with my family. Can you honestly say that none of them could have done it?
Yes,
said Daventry.
How?
Because it goes against the code.
Code? What code?
All societies have laws, Flinch, said West, and vampires are no exception. It's strictly against their code to harm another of their kind, or their assistants. For any of Lord Underwood's family to have done something like the crime that was committed against Lisa is, well, it's unthinkable.
Yeah, but it's not undoable, is it? Said David. One of them could have done it. I mean, physically, there's no force of nature that's preventing them, is there? It's just a law, a code.
Yes.
But that's ridiculous. People break the law all the time. They kill each other every day.
Please, Mr. Flinch, said West, holding up a hand as if to halt David. On this matter, you're just going to have to trust us. None of Lord Underwood's family could have done this. It must be another.
Another?
David picked up his glass and saw it was empty. He looked at Daventry. Daventry nodded to Elizabeth, who took David's glass and went to the bar.
Well, so who could this other be, then? Oh, it has to be me asking you this one, because you seem to know all the vampires in the phone book.
We do not, said West. We only know those we serve.
Well, so who might these others be, then?
Asked David.
They could be from anywhere, said West. Lord Underwood wasn't the first vampire in the world. There were others before him, and they too have their bloodlines.
Elizabeth returned with David's drink, which he took from her hand before she could get it onto the table. He took a drink from it and said,
So that's got to be it, then. Christ, it's one of these others, isn't it? A vampire from another bloodline. Underwood must have made enemies in his life. Plenty, I'd say. Or maybe, like I said, maybe it was a Flinch that pissed him off.
At this, Tobias West cleared his throat and sat forward.
Yes, but if I may, if what you're suggesting were true, Mr. Flinch, how on earth would they have known who you were? After all, you've not exactly been on the occult radar these last 30 years or so. You're David Smith, just a normal chap.
David considered for a moment, then he said,
Well, how do you guys know anything?
You're a sect, right? You have this network of people who work for you, servants of the Lord Underwood. Who's to say that these other vampires don't have their own sects too? And someone from one of these sects, maybe someone working for the Russian mob, maybe the Serbian mob, maybe even the Spanish police, someone knows what went down and who I am, and they pass that information on to their master.
Good heavens, said West thoughtfully.
It's possible, right? Said David.
West and Daventry exchanged a look.
I'm onto something, aren't I? Said David.
You may well be, Mr. Flinch, said West.
Great! Progress! So, what's our next move?
West put the stem of his pipe between his teeth and raised his eyebrows.
What?
What's our next move? Asked David. What are we going to do next? My guess is you're going to have to get onto your sect people in Scotland Yard or MI5 or Interpol or whatever and see what they can come up with. Then...
David stopped. West was shaking his head.
What?
Mr. Flinch, said West, much as we appreciate your help in this matter and deeply regret what's happened to you, there is no we in this operation. Your role in events is over, you see. You have to get back to Spain.
What? Why?
Do I have to remind you again, sir? You're still a suspect in a very major criminal investigation in Spain. Speaking as a lawyer, as your lawyer, I have to insist that you return there immediately and pray the police haven't been trying to contact you.
No! Said David. Fuck that! I'm staying here! This is my fucking fight, Mr. West, not yours! Whoever this vampire is, he's murdered my girlfriend and he's tried to murder me too! I'm the one he wants! It's personal! About as personal as you can fucking get! If you think I'm going back to Spain to sit in some house waiting for him to come and pick me off, you've got another thing coming!
You're angry, Mr. Flinch. Please, calm yourself.
David got up.
No, fuck calm yourself. You're forgetting who I am, Mr. West. I am David Flinch, as in Underwood and Flinch. I'm the head of the sect, and that means I'm your boss. So we'll have less of the go-homes and more of the yes-sirs, if you don't mind.
He noticed Daventry was shaking his head, his expression pitying.
What? What are you shaking your head at?
You, Mr. Flinch, you really believe that you're still the head of the sect? Why on earth would that be the case? You're an English teacher, for God's sake. You've spent your whole life with your back turned to the sect, to your family, to Lord Underwood. Why, the only reason you were ever called to the task at all was because your dying brother was a sentimental traditionalist. Personally, I wouldn't have hired you to press Lord Underwood's trousers, let alone serve as his guardian and protector. No experience, no training, and until only a couple of weeks ago, absolutely no loyalty whatsoever.
And even that could be disputed, said Tobias.
What?! David shouted, unable to contain his rage. Are you fucking kidding me? I risked my life for Underwood over and over again. Jesus Christ, if it weren't for me, he'd be...
dead, said Tobias.
"Fuck you, Sonny!" shouted David. "He didn't die because I failed him. He died because he chose to."
"Really, Mr. Flinch?" said West. "No one is seriously questioning your loyalty."
"Yes, they bloody are. Are you listening?"
"We're only concerned for your welfare," West continued. "If you stay here, you not only endanger your life by putting yourself in harm's way, but you endanger your liberty by potentially making yourself a fugitive from justice. The last thing we need is the Spanish police chasing after you."
"And so, after all of us," added Daventry. "You're a liability, Flinch. Can't you see that? If you really want to serve the sect, then you'll do as we say and get back to Spain. We can protect you there. We have trained people who can guard you day and night."
"Oh, right, yeah, the kind of people you would have had guarding Underwood instead of me, right?"
"David," said Elizabeth gently, "I think perhaps we should go. You're tired. You hardly slept in the car." David turned on her.
"Is that surprising? Jesus, every time I close my eyes, I can hear Lisa screaming in my head. I'm going to be hearing that for the rest of my bloody life."
"You need a sedative. I can get you one. I can take you to a hotel, get you settled in, and we can talk later."
"No!"
He pulled his arm away from where she had laid a hand on it.
"I'm the head of the bloody sect, do you hear me?"
He pointed a finger that swept before the faces of the men opposite him.
"And the sooner you three cop onto that, the sooner we're going to get to the bottom of who the fuck killed Lisa. Do you understand?"
"Perfectly," said Daventry, getting up and coming around to take David's empty glass.
"He's right, Carlton. He's Lord Underwood's chosen man, and we are duty-bound. Same again, Mr. Flinch?"
"Yes," said David, calmer now.
"Thank you."
He sat down again.
I'm sorry I lost my temper, but Elizabeth's right. I've had hardly any sleep this morning. I just..."
"It's all right, Mr. Flinch," said West. "No one's judging you. You've been under a phenomenal strain. And on behalf of all of us, I apologise. We..."
He glanced pointedly at Daventry.
"Meant no offence, did we, Mr. Daventry?"
"No, Mr. West, we did not," replied Daventry without turning. "However, we also have to consider our other option."
"Other option?" said David, taking the drink Daventry now handed him. "What other option?" Daventry sat down again and settled his elbows on the table, holding his hands together and touching his lips as if in silent prayer. Then he said,
"We know that in the course of your tenure as guardian of Lord Underwood, your sister became a vampire. But was she the only one?"
David took a drink. He was past sipping now. It was a deep swallow.
"What?"
"Was Lydia the only person who was changed?"
"Could his lordship have made any others?" added West. "Intentionally or otherwise?"
"Other vampires?" said David. "No, not that I can think of."
"And what about this Mullins woman?"
said Daventry.
"I understand from Hernandez you said Lord Underwood had an affection for her."
"Michelle? Yeah, but he didn't. As I told Hernandez, I stopped him."
"Are you sure?"
"Absolutely. She was there with me at the end, out in the sunlight. She was fine."
West puffed on his pipe.
"But if she were early on into the process, perhaps..."
"No!"
David's head felt strange, like the ideas inside were starting to swim together in a slowly thickening congestion.
"He told me. Told me he hadn't done it. I know he didn't. I got there in time."
"Then another," said Daventry. "Could there have been another?"
"No, there was no one else."
David shook his head, and the men's faces blurred before his eyes.
"Christ, this is some strong whiskey."
"Are you all right, Mr. Flinch?"
said Daventry, smiling.
"Perhaps you ought to lie down."
"No."
David's voice sounded thick and slurry in his ears.
"You
He looked at the drink, tried to reach for it, wanted to sniff it, to hold it up to the light, now understanding. But his hand moved through the glass as he went for the wrong one of the two, three, four in front of him.
You drug me?
The other option, Mr. Flinch, said Daventry. If you won't go back to Spain of your own accord, we'll have to pack you off there by force. We have a private jet, don't worry. All you need to do now is close your eyes and get some much-needed rest. And when you wake up, you'll be back in your own bed with an armed guard to protect you from anything that might come calling in the night.
No. David felt himself falling away, sliding from consciousness as the drug pulled him down into its depths. He saw West, his face huge, his mouth like a widening darkness.
Trust us, Mr. Flinch. We're lawyers.
And so, David Flinch slips into early retirement, and power over the sect slips into the hands of Daventry and West. A happy ending of sorts. For episode 4, that is. Join me for episode 5 and a whole new beginning to Underwood and Flinch Underground. The music you're listening to is Ahmad Armour by Fareed Farjad, courtesy of Taraneh Records, specialists in Persian music. To find out more, go to taranehrecords.com or visit my website, mikebennettauthor.com, and follow the links there.
This podcast has been brought to you today by you. Yes, you, and all my other sponsors at Patreon. Thank you for supporting me, and never forget that everything I produce from now on, be it on paper or on podcast, is as a result of your contribution.
Yeah! I
did a mini fist pump there, but obviously you couldn't see it.